Sarge was stacking gear, sorting out what he wanted to take, and what he felt they could do without for now. Mike, Ted, and Doc were going through their gear, distributing the extra ammo they had received, as well as some of the other trash. They now had two vehicles. One looked sort of like a Raptor UTV, only armored, and with seats for four. The second one was larger, and could hold seven men. Sarge had decided to use the larger of the two as his. It had some rather interesting goodies on board, and Fagioni had taken great delight in demonstrating its capabilities to him. The buggy had a telescoping mast that held a thermal and conventional camera. There was an LCD display mounted in the cockpit that could be viewed from either of the front seats. Each entry point of the vehicle had a weapon mount, and there was also one on top. The gunner stood on a platform behind the roll cage. It had a cargo area that was being filled with packs, bags, and assorted gear. Fuel was going to be the biggest concern. To address this issue, Fagioni provided a trailer. The sides of the trailer were armored with a double layer of thin steel. The plates were armor-grade steel, and the two layers meant that even if a round penetrated the outer layer, it would just bounce around inside the void. At least, that was the theory. The trailer would be packed with fuel cans and any additional gear that wouldn't fit in the two buggies. Their mission was pretty simple. Find places where the feds were in numbers and report back so that appropriate actions could be taken against them. Beyond that, the orders were real simple. Persecute any target of opportunity. Sarge had gone to the quartermaster with a list of what he wanted. The colonel had told him that if he needed anything, to let him know. And Sarge could have done that. But old habits died hard. Instead, he kept the folks in supply busy, trying to find impossible items, while the guys cut a fence and went to work. They had driven both buggies straight there, from the motor pool, and helped themselves to what they needed. Sarge was berating a corporal when Ted wheeled around to the open bay door of the old Quonset hut. Seeing Ted, Sarge looked at the bewildered corporal and said, "Never mind, you're useless as tits on a boar," and stomped off to the buggy. Climbing in, he looked over at Ted, who just smiled, and started to move forward. Sarge put a boot up on the dash of the machine and said, "Good." Mike and Doc were already back at the barracks when Ted and Sarge returned. Mike was leaning in the doorway, and as Sarge stepped out, he said, "You've got mail." I sat there absentmindedly, watching the little lights blink. Looking over at the door, it was obvious that something would have to be done about it tomorrow, but right now, I just didn't really care. I should have felt good about feeding those people, but I didn't, both because it took food out of the mouths of my own family, and because I knew it wouldn't help in the end. Just like all the people who had gone before them, they were going to end up in the forest and starve. And who knew what horrible things might happen to them before then? I headed back into the house. Mel was sitting on the couch reading a book to Little Bit. Her sisters were lying on the floor in front of the fireplace, reading books as well. I took off my coat and hung it on the hooks by the door. Mel looked up at me and smiled, and Little Bit craned her head around and smiled too. That did a lot to mend my mood. I flopped down in my chair and put my feet up on the ottoman. It was quiet, and the fire was nice. I sat there staring into the fire while Mel finished reading Where the Sidewalk Ends. When she was done, we all sat in the quiet for a bit. Little Bit fell asleep, and Mel motioned for me. I picked her up and carried her to her room. She snuggled against me, and I dropped my face into her hair. It smelled like it always did, a scent that is hard to describe, but could only be that of a little girl. I laid her in her bed and pulled the quilt up over her. Back in the living room, Leanne and Taylor were talking to Mel. We sat there for a little while, chatting. Mainly, they were telling us about the books they were reading. I sat there, looking at them as they talked. They seemed so normal, so out of touch with what was going on. But I was glad. Glad they weren't sitting around worrying all the time. For now, anyway, they could enjoy their youth. Mel announced it was bedtime, and surprisingly, the girls didn't complain. Leanne rolled over and stretched, yawning. They got up and came over to my chair, where I'd planted myself after putting little Bit to bed. Each of them gave me a hug, then Mel, saying goodnight. As they headed for their rooms, Leanne said, "Dad, can you come say goodnight?" "I just did." "No, I mean in my room." I smiled at her, and for a brief second, wondered how much longer she would do that. "Of course, I always do." I sat for another minute, and then went to say goodnight to the girls. Mel was in our room, getting undressed when I came in. She was leaning over, kicking her jeans off, and I walked up and slapped her on the butt. She looked over her shoulder at me and smiled. Then I realized my rifle was leaning by the front door. "I gotta get my rifle," I said, as I opened the door. "Hurry up!" I looked back to see Mel patting the bed. I went out and picked up my rifle and made the rounds to make sure all the doors were locked, then headed for the bedroom. The lamp on my side of the bed was still on when I came back in, and Mel was peeking out from under the covers at me. All I could see were her eyes. I leaned the rifle against the wall beside the bed and started to undress. "Take off your utility belt, Batman." "Batman? Look at all the crap you carry around." "I got your Batman right here." I climbed under the comforter and reached over and turned off the light, then rolled over. "Oh, Batman," Mel said, and I couldn't help it and started to giggle. Mel was soon giggling too. As had become my custom, I woke up about 5:30 in the morning. Pulling on a pair of flannel PJs, I picked up the XD and headed for the kitchen to start the coffee. Once the coffee was brewing on the stove, I looked out the sliding glass door at the shop. It was just like I'd left it. I went out on the front porch. It was cold out and clear. It was too dark yet to see anything, so I just stood there listening. It was just as quiet as it was still. Back inside, I dressed quietly, putting on a tact vest and holster for the pistol, then slinging the AR. By the time I got back to the kitchen, the coffee was bubbling in the pot. I poured it into a stainless steel bottle and wrapped it in a dish towel, then dropped it in a cargo pocket. There was still about a cup left in the pot, so I took an insulated travel mug from the cabinet and poured it in, then added some powdered creamer and sugar in, and headed for the door. The seat on the ATV was cold. Meathead and Little Girl came running up as I started it up. They ran behind me as I went out the gate. Thad and Jeff were standing around the burn barrel trying to keep warm. They looked up as I arrived, and that big smile was on Thad's face as I walked up to them. "Coffee?" I asked as I pulled the bottle out of my pocket. "Damn straight," Jeff said, snatching the bottle from my hand. He quickly poured himself and Thad a cup. We stood around the fire drinking our coffee. The road was empty, and I asked them how the foot traffic had been overnight. They said it had tapered off around 10, and had completely stopped by midnight. There were no more incidents with people walking by, and Jeff said he thought the best thing we could do was not to man the barricade, to pull the security farther back, and make it appear the place was empty. "Pull it back to where?" I asked.
"Back there, where you guys put them stocks. It would cut down on the amount of real estate we're trying to secure," Thad replied.
I looked down the road. That would put my house on this side of it. They just stood there sipping their coffee for a moment. Then Jeff said,
"You could move to another house. There are some empty ones back there."
I didn't hesitate. No way. Not yet, at least. That would be hard on my family, and I'm not ready to do that to them. I mean, I've got power, water, and a whole setup. You guys know how busy we've been. When would I find the time to redo all that?
"It may come to that," Thad said.
"Not yet," I fired back. When the coffee was finished, I suggested that they go get some sleep. Reggie would have that pig ready later in the day, and I knew they would want to be there for that. It wasn't a hard sell. They saddled up and headed down the road. I stayed there for a little while, leaning over the log barricade, thinking about what they'd said. It was still early, and there weren't any people out on the road, so I decided to ride over to Reggie's and see how the pig was doing. No one else had showed up to stand watch yet, but I didn't have the patience to wait and probably be disappointed. I knew that kind of fuck-it attitude was dangerous, but I gave into it, because I knew I'd be back in less than an hour. Reggie was splitting some wood by the smoker when I pulled up. He tossed a piece of wood in the firebox as I walked up. "How's the pig looking?" Reggie closed the door in the firebox and said, "Ready about any time, really. What time you want to eat?" "Let's get everyone together around noon." Reggie wiped his hands on his pants. "Sounds good to me. I just wanted to drop by and see how you're doing. I'm going to go up to the barricade for a while. Jeff and Thad were out there all night."
"Any trouble?"
"Nah. There's just a lot of people moving by lately. Looks like they all have a camp set up out at the range. Or maybe folks are still thinking they can make it in the woods. No way in hell I'm going to a damn camp."
"Me neither, brother. Me neither."
Danny showed up at the barricade about 10. I was sitting in the Polaris, watching a group of 6 people walk by. He parked beside me, and we sat there talking about the people. The one thing that really caught our eye was that none of the people we saw go by had any kind of visible weapons. We theorized that they had turned them over to the feds in order to get into the camp, though it seemed cruel to make people walk to a refugee camp without protection. Anything could happen to them, and we knew it probably would. About half an hour after Danny showed up, we heard a vehicle coming down the road from the north. We sat there listening to it approach, and then a tan Humvee came into view. There was a gunner in the turret, and when he saw us, he swung the weapon around and said something to the driver. The truck stopped and sat there for a moment. Neither of us moved, mainly because looking down the business end of the saw scared the shit out of us. The thought of jumping for cover and giving them the green light to open up on us was another reason. If we didn't act like a threat, maybe they wouldn't treat us like one. 3 men got out of the truck. The driver and gunner stayed. They looked around the area for a minute, then walked toward us. Danny leaned over and said, "What do you think they want?"
"Don't know, but we're about to find out."
I raised a hand and waved. "Morning." The guy in the lead nodded, then stopped and inspected the barricade before speaking.
"You guys live here?"
"Yep," Danny replied. The man looked around, then back at the logs, putting a hand on the top crossbeam and shaking it.
"Looks pretty sturdy."
"Just keeping honest people honest," I replied. He looked back at us, from Danny to me, in one of those awkward silences. Danny and I just sat there, and finally he spoke.
"Some of the people walking down the road say they are being robbed by men on the road here."
"Not around here. We haven't seen anything like that," Danny said.
"It's not what I heard."
His statement caught us both by surprise.
"Heard from who?"
Danny asked. The man looked over his shoulder at someone in the Humvee. We were shocked when we saw who stepped out of it. Mark approached the barricade, wearing the same uniform as the man before us.
"Morgan? Danny?"
Mark said with a nod. We were both speechless for a moment. Before either of us said a word, the other man continued.
"Mark, you said there was some raiding going on around."
"Yeah, there were a couple of raids."
The man looked back to us.
"So you haven't seen anything like that?"
I looked at Mark.
"Dude, what the fuck?
You went to the camp, took up with these guys?"
"Don't look surprised. We talked about this. People want to be told what to do, and I simply went along with that line of thought. Now they come to us, and we tell them what to do."
"You know how fucked that sounds?"
Danny asked. Mark looked at him.
"Why?"
"We're just giving them what they want. Someone to feed them, tell them when and where to work."
The other man cut in.
"Though they don't really like that part," he said with a grin.
Mark continued.
"Like you said many times, things are different now. There's no more free ride. You gotta work for your keep now."
"So what, people come to the camp and you guys push them around?" I asked.
Mark shifted his feet. He had a look in his face like he smelled shit.
"We're not pushing anyone around, but you have to work."
"What about us?" Danny asked.
"What about you?" the other man said.
"What about those of us who don't want to go along with—"
I paused for a moment looking for the proper word.
"Your program."
"You will eventually. You can't last forever."
I looked at Mark.
"I think you know better than that."
The other man smiled.
You may not like the taste of the medicine, but sometimes you just gotta hold your nose and swallow.
I've never been much of one for doctors or medicine. We'll just take care of ourselves.
You have that option for now, but the day is coming. We've got shit to do.
I'll be seeing you around, Mark said as he turned to leave.
Not in your camp, Danny said.
Mark stopped and looked back, and the other man let out a slight laugh, shook his head, and headed for the truck. Mark turned and followed him. We stood there and watched the truck as it drove away. Danny asked if I thought Rick had gone with Mark, and we agreed he must have. They had both disappeared the same day. We talked about whether or not the sheriff was in on it, too. There was no way to know, but we had to try and find out. From the way those guys had been acting, we had to start thinking about bugging out, somewhere they didn't know about. The alternative was to sit there and wait for them to show up. And that damn sure wasn't going to happen. The discussion continued as we headed for Reggie's. We needed to talk this over with everyone. Reggie had put up a folding table beside the barn, and Mel and Bobby had set the food they made out on that. We had brought a stack of paper plates and plastic spoons and forks for everyone. I asked Reggie if I could invite John, his wife, and Renee, and he said that was fine. Renee and the girls were over looking at the pigs in the pen. The women were all fussing over the table while the guys and I were trying to get the pig out of the smoker without dropping it on the ground. Danny pulled a couple of sawhorses out of Reggie's shop and set them up. Then, with a pair of welding gloves and the help of a pry bar, we got the whole grate out of the smoker and set it on the horses. We all brought camp chairs with us and set them up around a fire pit Reggie had dug near the smoker. We sat around the fire eating plates of tender pork, mac and cheese, baked beans, and a big pot of green beans. Danny had even made some okra, much to Thad's delight. I tossed my plate in the fire when I finished and sat sipping on some tea. The girls were all talking and laughing. Renee was looking better, but was still thin. They looked like typical girls at the moment. Reggie was telling some kind of BS story to Jeff and Thad, who were both laughing. I stood up and walked over to the smoker. There was still a big stack of wood there, and I leaned over and picked up a couple of pieces. I didn't hear it, or maybe I did, but I was hit in the chest. I heard screams, then the shooting, lots of shooting. I couldn't breathe. I was flat on my back on the ground, and I couldn't get any air. I looked over to the fire pit. Little Bit was on the ground, Taylor on top of her. Her eyes were full of tears, her mouth open. Was she screaming? Was it her? Her little eyes locked with mine, and she reached out. I couldn't hear her, but I could tell she was screaming, Daddy. Looking past her, I saw Mel and Leanne on the ground, trying to hide under a damn plastic folding table. She had her hands over her ears, and she was looking at me. I reached out, but they were so far away. Finally a breath, just a wisp of air. God, it hurt. I rolled on my side. I could see Danny firing. I could hear the crack of the bullets, then something louder, not as fast, but steady. I was laying on my AR. I tried to pull it around, but I still couldn't take a full breath. Like a turtle on its back, I rolled around, trying to free the AR. The shouts and screams became louder, and I finally managed to pull the rifle out from under me. I saw Danny firing toward the back of Reggie's property into the woods. Lying on my side, I started to shoot in that direction, shooting under the smoker. I couldn't see anything, didn't see anything, just started throwing lead into the woods. The mag in the rifle ran dry quickly. I tried to pull a mag from the vest, but it wouldn't budge, so I went to another pocket and pulled one out. In the time it took me to reload, the firing died down. Suddenly, Little Bit was at my side, shaking me and screaming,
Get up, Daddy, get up!
Taylor was there too. Tears were streaming down her face, leaving little trails of mud. I reached out and pulled them down behind the smoker and croaked out,
Stay here! I'm gonna check on your mom and sister.
Taylor wrapped her arms around her little sister. She said, Are you okay, Dad? Were you shot? I cracked a little smile.
I don't know what happened, but I think I'm all right.
Are you two okay? They nodded back at me. I reached out and smoothed Taylor's hair, then little bits. Stay here. I'll be right back.
Don't go! Daddy, stay here!
Little Bit cried. We'll be okay. You just stay put, I said. Then started to crawl over to where Mel and Leanne were. They had managed to move around the side of the barn, and were lying on the ground with their backs against the wall. Danny was standing beside them, looking around the corner toward the woods. Leanne was holding her calf, both hands tightly wrapped around it. My heart sank when I saw the blood that ran between her fingers. When she saw me crawling toward her, she cried out, "Daddy, help me!" Mel had a rag and was trying to get her to move her hands so she could wrap it around her leg. When she cried out, Danny looked back over his shoulder at them. Seeing what was going on, he immediately dropped down to his knees and pulled a dressing out of a pouch on the vest he wore. All I could see was my daughter, but behind me, someone was still screaming. I needed to get to Leanne. She was crying, and so was Mel. Mel was about to panic.
Oh my God, she's been shot! She's been shot!
Danny was trying to get a bandage on the wound and calm Mel down at the same time. When I finally made it to them, I tried to calm Mel. I told her to sit beside Leanne and hold on to her.
It's all right, kiddo. You're gonna be okay, I said, as I helped Danny slide the leg of her jeans up.
In our current situation, cutting up a good pair of pants was out of the question, unless it was life or death.
It hurts so bad. Am I going to die?
You're not going to die. Just sit tight, Danny said. With the pants pulled up, we could see the wound. There was an entry and an exit on her right calf, behind the bone. It was bleeding, but not profusely. The one dressing was big enough to wrap around her little calf. Danny tied it off, and the pressure of the dressing slowed the bleeding. Danny told me to stay with them, and that he was going to check on everyone else. I pulled myself up so I was sitting beside Leanne and wrapped my arms around her. Mel was on the other side of her and laid her head on my arm. I tried to comfort them both, telling them it was going to be all right. They both sat there crying. We sat there for a few minutes. Then Danny came back with Taylor and Little Bit. They both sat down against the wall with us, and now there were four of them sitting there crying and scared. Danny caught my eye and nodded for me to follow him. I told the girls I would be back shortly and followed Danny around the barn. Reggie was sitting in one of the camp chairs, leaning forward with his head down. He had his hands together in front of him. A steady rivulet of blood ran from them, pooling on the ground in front of his boots. He looked up at us as we approached, and through clenched teeth, he said,
"They shot my fucking finger off! The bastards blew it off!"
My eyes went from his eyes to his hands, and he opened them. The ring finger on his left hand was gone, and the pinky looked like it had been skinned. He quickly gripped it in his right, squeezing. I pulled a bandage out of my vest and tore it open. He took it and laid the mangled hand into it, then squeezed it. Thad was by the table, kneeling down. I looked over and saw a body on the ground in front of him. It was Renee. I walked over just as he was raising her head off the dirt, sliding a folded coat under it, then gently laying it back down. Her eyes were open, glazed a little. She was awake. I looked her over and didn't see any blood. Thad looked at John and his wife and said,
"Just stay with her. Keep her awake. I think she's in shock, so don't let her go to sleep."
John nodded and held one of her hands as he knelt beside her. When he stood, I asked what had happened to her. He said he didn't know, that he had just found her on the ground, unconscious. Knowing how malnourished she was, we guessed she must have gone into shock and passed out. Maybe too much food at one time, all of a sudden. Then the shooting and adrenaline rush was just too much for her. At least, we hoped that was all it was.
"The hell happened to you?" Thad asked.
I looked down at my chest, patting it with my left hand.
"Don't know. Guess I was hit."
Danny stepped in front of me.
"I guess so," he said,
and reached out and grabbed one of the mags in my vest and pulled on it.
He had to really yank to get it out. The side of the magazine was caved in and split. He held it up for us to see. He ran his thumb across the dent in it. His thumb fit in it. That was a big round. I took the magazine from him and looked at it.
Yeah. Must have been a pistol round. Maybe a 45.
I think a rifle round would have went through it.
And through you, Thad said.
Jeff came trotting back up.
They went that way, he said, pointing off to the east. You want to go after them?
I looked off to the east. No. I need to go get the doc for Leanne and Reggie.
I'll go. You stay here with them, Danny said.
I'll go with you, Thad said.
Thanks, guys, I said. Jeff stayed with me. He tried to help Reggie, who really didn't want any. I went and checked on Leanne. The bleeding had stopped. There were just two little holes, one in and one out. Looking at them, I started to think about it. Whatever hit her was low velocity. If it had been a high velocity round, the damage would have been much worse. Then I thought about that magazine. It was probably the same kind of round. After making sure Leanne was okay, I went over to the smoker and started looking around. I found the bullet under the woodpile. I had to dig all the way down to the bottom of the stack, looking for it. It was a full metal jacket 9mm or 38. My guess was 9mm. I rolled the projectile between my fingers, looking at it. Jeff came up and said he wanted to go look for the guys. I told him we should wait, and we began to discuss the whole situation, who it could have been and why. The possibilities there were numerous. Jeff said he was going to go out to the tree line and keep an eye out in case anyone came back. He was also going to look for anything they might have left behind. I told him to be careful and went over to check on John and Renee. She was still lying on the ground, but looked a lot better now. John was a mess, though. He looked like he was about to fall apart. I pulled him off to the side and asked if he was okay.
We can't take this anymore, Morgan. I mean, all we were doing was having a cookout, and someone starts shooting? Look at my daughter, look at yours.
I know. But what are you going to do? We just have to learn to be more careful, I guess. He stood there for a moment, looking off into the distance.
My wife wants us to leave.
I looked at him like he was nuts. And go where? Where do you think you will be safer? He looked back at me, his face blank.
The camp.
You gotta be shitting me. You think that will be better?
We don't have any food. I have a shotgun, but that's it. Look at all the guns you guys have. And people still just attacked you.
I don't see being herded into a camp as a good thing. I'll take my chances here. Hell, anywhere but there.
He said, that's the decision you have to make for your family. I've made mine. Thanks for what you've done for us. I really appreciate it.
He stuck his hand out and I shook it. Then he turned and walked away. I watched him walk back to his family. He and his wife helped Renee to her feet and they moved toward home. Renee stopped by Taylor and knelt down beside her. They hugged, and there were more tears. Renee stood up, wiped tears from her face, and started to walk off, her mom's hand in her left hand, and John's in her right. When they got to the gate, she turned and smiled at Taylor, and then they were gone. I went back to Leanne. She was watching John's family go.
Where are they going, Dad?
Leanne asked, still holding her leg.
I was looking out toward the dirt road they had disappeared on.
Not sure, honey. I looked down at her and smiled.
You okay?
She looked at the ground between her feet and nodded.
It hurts a lot.
I know, baby. The doctor is coming.
Now that things had calmed down a bit, Mel got up.
What are we going to do? If we aren't safe here, where are we going to go?
I let out a long breath.
We'll be okay. We just have to start being more careful.
How can you say we'll be okay? You were shot in the chest. Leanne was shot in the leg. Either one of you could have died.
What would we do if you were killed? She was upset and getting more so. I stepped up to her and wrapped my arms around her.
Calm down.
We'll figure something out. She just stood there for a minute, her face in my chest.
She pushed me away. It's cold. What's cold? With her index finger, she poked one of the mags still in my vest. Where's the doctor? Is she going to be okay? She asked, looking back at Leanne. All three of the girls were lined up, sitting against the wall. Keep an eye on them. I'm gonna check on Reggie. Mel nodded and went and sat with the girls. Reggie was still sitting in the chair, leaning forward. The blood had stopped running out of his hands, but the dressing was soaked. Looking around the fire pit, I found his .45 and picked it up. Dirt was caked on the blood-spattered grip and slide. The checkering on the front of the grip had a ding in it where the bullet must have hit. I sat down in the chair beside him. The effort of sitting made my chest burn. I stuck the barrel of the pistol into the little mesh cup holder. Didn't know you were a lefty. Reggie looked up at me, his jaw clenched. Not anymore. Trying to take the edge off things, I said, Yeah. Guess this really fucked up your sex life. He grunted. You're an asshole, Morgan. Then looked up at me. I shot a shit-eating grin back at him, and he shook his head and smiled. The sound of a couple of approaching ATVs brought me to my feet, carbine at the ready. Thad and Danny came through the gate, and the doc was riding with Danny. Sarge pushed past Mike, into the old barracks, and headed for the little table the radio gear was set up on. Sitting down, he read the message on the screen. Where are you, old man? We could use some help.
Who the hell's he calling old? Sarge shouted. If the shoe fits, Mike replied. Shut up, dipshit.
Sarge typed a quick reply.
Watch who you're calling old. What's the situation?
And hit enter. He looked over at the little box connected to his radio and watched as the LEDs blinked.
What's the plan, Sarge? Ted asked.
Spinning around in his chair, he saw all three of the guys were standing there. He looked at each of them and said,
Time to start the dance. Get your dress on, Mikey. We have to meet the riggers at 0100. They're going to sling our rides and insert us. Where are we going? Doc asked.
Sarge glanced over his shoulder at the screen, then turned back.
Looks like we're going to Lake County, to start with.
What was left of the afternoon was spent in frenzied activity, each of the men packing the gear they wanted in their packs and loading them into the vehicles. Then, working together, they started to load all the supplies they had acquired from the quartermaster earlier. As the work started to wind down, Sarge told the guys to decide who was going to hit the rack and get some sleep. In the meantime, he went to the radios with a thermos of coffee and put his feet up on the table, staring at the screen. The doc hopped off the ATV and, seeing Reggie's hand, headed for him. Reggie waved him off with his hand.
Go take care of her. I ain't going anywhere.
The doc went to Leanne. Danny and Thad took up positions to keep an eye on things. I went over and knelt beside Leanne. The doc unwrapped the bandage from around her leg, and the fear reappeared on her face. She reached out and grabbed my hand. I told her the doctor was here and she was going to be okay. After unwrapping her leg, he inspected the wound, gently turning it to inspect the exit wound. He didn't say anything, just adjusted his glasses, dabbed at the wounds with a sponge, then gently laid her leg out on the dressing he removed.
Looks pretty clean, but there is a risk of infection. There could be some fibers from her jeans in the wound.
Am I going to need stitches? Leanne asked. He looked up at her and smiled.
No, honey. These holes are small. They'll heal on their own, but you're going to have to keep it clean. And even though it hurts, you need to walk on it too.
She nodded her head, but said nothing. Chapter 32. Sarge leaned against the fender of the Humvee, watching the riggers. He was always amazed at how these guys could sling a load perfectly. There were six of them at work on his babies. The two buggies and trailer were being connected to straps. The men crawled over the equipment like ants, on top, underneath, and around all sides. They shouted and cussed at one another, but the straps were secured one by one. When all was ready, Stalker 1,
the first of the two Blackhawks, came into a hover over the mass of gear. One of the riggers reached up and attached a strap to a hook on the belly of the Hilo, then ran out from under it, gave the pilot a thumbs up, and watched as the big bird took the slack. Sarge could hear the change in pitch as the big helicopter took the weight of the load slung under it. The two buggies and the trailer lifted as one, then jostled around and found their center point, but all of them were almost perfectly level. As soon as Stalker 1 was clear, Stalker 2 taxied out. Sarge looked over his shoulder at the three men standing behind him. Their faces were smeared with camo paint, and each of them was hard as iron.
"Let's go! Saddle up, ladies!"
As one, they nodded at him, then ran toward the waiting Hilo. Sarge waited till Doc passed him, and paused for a moment, watching these incredible warriors as they sprinted toward the waiting Blackhawk, and shook his head.
"Damn, I love this shit," he thought, then ran out to catch up.
We brought Leanne and her sisters home. Taylor went to her room and came back with Jeff's iPad and a set of headphones. Little Bit disappeared and returned with a pillow from her bed for her sister to prop her leg up on. Mel asked if there was anything she could do for her. Leanne said, "Some mac and cheese would be nice, thanks." Mel went straight to the kitchen to heat some up. I knelt down beside Leanne and asked, "Is there anything I can get for you? Can you start a fire? I'm cold." I smiled at her and rubbed a hand through her hair. "Sure." With the supplies I kept by the fireplace, I had one going in no time. Pine needles and lighter wood make it possible for anyone to start a fire. As the fire built, Leanne fell asleep. She was out cold when I turned to ask her if it was good enough. I went to her room and pulled the quilt off her bed, returned to the living room, and laid it out over her. Mel walked in with a bowl of mac and cheese. I said, "She's out." She stood there looking at Leanne and asked, "Is she going to be okay?" "The doc said she would. We just have to make sure she takes the antibiotics, and we clean it every day. He gave us those painkillers, but I really don't think she'll need them. Honestly, I'm more worried about Reggie. What are we going to do? I'm scared." I walked over to her and wrapped my arms around her. "I know, baby. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk to the guys and figure out what to do." I stepped back from her and said, "We may have to leave the house." "I don't care where we are, as long as the girls are safe," she said. She put her hand on my chest. "How do you feel?" I hadn't thought much about it, but I was sore. Every breath hurt. "I'm fine, baby. I was lucky." "I don't want to rely on luck. You've got to be more careful. I don't know what we would do without you." I tried to put on the confident face, but inside, I wasn't so sure. It had been too close. I still had the bullet in my pocket, the one with my name on it. Maybe as long as I had it, there wouldn't be another one. It was a nice thought, but I knew it was bullshit. "I promise, babe, I'll try. Besides, someone has to be around here to complain about your cooking," I nudged her. That little joke didn't even get a smile from her. "I'm tired. I'm going to bed," Mel said. "Go ahead. I gotta go back out to the shop for a minute." "Don't be long." "I won't." Mel headed for the bedroom, and I went out to the slider toward the shop. I still hadn't dealt with that damn door. Inside, I tapped the touchpad on the laptop, and it came to life. There was a message blinking back at me. "Watch who you're calling old. What's the situation?" I smiled when I saw it, knowing it chapped his ass. I typed a reply, telling him what had happened and who I thought was behind it, and hit enter. The LEDs blinked, and the laptop grunted and groaned. Thad and Jeff both stayed with Reggie. The doc did what he could, but he was no plastic surgeon. If Reggie survived the inevitable infections, he would have the use of his hand, but it would never be the same. "It's all I can do." The doc leaned back, letting out a breath. Reggie, sweat-soaked, looked at the sutures in his hand. The ring finger on his left hand was gone, and a patch of raw red skin had been pulled tight over where the knuckle had been and stitched together. The pinky finger
had a string of stitches running down the inside of it. It was swollen and sore as hell.
Thanks, Doc. I appreciate it.
It's not pretty, but it's the best I can do. He reached into his bag and pulled out two bottles, setting them on the table beside the couch. This one's an antibiotic. Take it 3 times a day. This one is for pain. Take it as needed. But be careful. It's a heavy dose.
Reggie looked at the two bottles, then over at Thad.
You staying here tonight?
Thad nodded. Reggie reached over and picked up the bottle of painkillers and spun the top off with one hand, shaking out 2 of the big pills. He quickly tossed them into his mouth and swallowed them dry.
I said be careful. Well, that's going to make you a pile of mush, the doc shouted.
Good, Reggie said. Then he laid his head back on the pillow and closed his eyes. Mike was sitting by the door, an elbow resting on his knee, and his chin in his palm, looking out, as the blackness passed in a blur. Sarge reached over and punched him in the shoulder, knocking his elbow off his knee. Irritated, he looked back at the old man. Sarge tossed a set of earphones to him and motioned for him to put them on. Mike pulled them over his ears and immediately began to hear radio chatter.
Hear that, Stalker 1. Bronco 3's bringing up the rear.
Mike looked over and keyed the intercom.
That the same Bronco that saved our ass out in the swamp?
Sarge nodded his head and keyed his mic.
Doc, Morgan and some of his got wounded. Soon as we get there, you see to them pronto.
Doc nodded as he keyed his intercom.
What sort of wounds? One of his daughters has a gunshot wound to her calf. Doesn't sound too bad, but you need to look at it. The other's a little worse. Sounds like one of his boys had a couple of fingers shot off.
Ted was shaking his head.
Why didn't he call for help sooner? If it's that bad, he should have been on the horn to us.
He's just fucking thick-headed, I guess, Sarge said.
What kind of trouble they got? Mike asked. He's not sure. They were raided a couple of days ago and managed to fend those guys off. And yesterday, they were ambushed. That's when they suffered the casualties, Sarge said.
Whoever they are, they're some sorry sons of bitches for shooting a little girl, Ted said.
Damn straight. Let's go make dead out of them, Sarge said.
I closed the door of the shop and stood there, looking up at the sky. It was cold out, and the stars were brilliant. I remember sitting out by the fire pit on nights like this and watching as the International Space Station passed overhead. It made me wonder if it was still up there, and if it was, how long they could last without support from Earth. Would they run out of food and starve, or run out of oxygen and suffocate first? Either way, it would be horrible. I went and checked on Leanne. She was sleeping soundly, so I added a log to the fireplace, and, after a quick check of all the doors, went to bed. Mel was already sleeping when I got there. I didn't disturb her as I took off all my hardware, leaning the rifle beside the bed and laying the pistol on the table. I climbed under the blankets and quickly went to sleep. The next morning I slept late. I woke up to an empty bed and light coming in through the blinds. For a moment, I just lay there in a haze, much as I would on any other ordinary Sunday. I was absent-mindedly watching a beam of light that cut through the blinds and landed on the wall opposite the bed. Little particles of dust floated on the light. Then suddenly I remembered that things were different. It wasn't an ordinary Sunday. I jumped from the bed and grabbed the XD from the table. The door swung open, and I raised the pistol. Taylor froze in the door, holding a cup of coffee. I looked at her, then at the pistol, and slowly lowered it.
Sorry, baby, I overslept.
She surprised me with her lack of reaction to me pointing a gun at her.
It's okay, Dad. Mom said to let you sleep. You want some coffee?
Yeah. Thanks, sorry about that. She smiled and walked toward me, offering the cup.
It's okay. Things are different now, I get it.
I smiled and took the cup from her. I knew she would want to know if I liked it or not, so I took a quick sip. It was really good. She always made a good cup of coffee.
Mmm, that's good.
Go on, I'll be out in a minute. She smiled and said,
There's eggs and biscuits for breakfast. I took my time dressing. Mel had a plate sitting on the table for me, scrambled eggs and a biscuit. A can of Red Feather butter sat on the table, a rare and precious luxury. Before sitting down to the plate, I went to check on Leanne. She was still lying on the couch, playing on the iPad. If she was doing that, I thought she must be all right. How you feeling this morning? She didn't even look up from whatever it was she was doing. Better? I rubbed her head and went back to the kitchen to eat. Little Bit was sitting at the table, pushing some eggs around her plate. Her elbow was sitting on the table, and she rested her head on her knuckles. You okay, Rugrat?
Yeah.
I reached over and slid her plate out from in front of her. If you're not going to eat these, I will, I said, as I went to scoop some eggs off her plate. Hey, those are mine. She reached out and pulled the plate back to her far side, making a show of shielding it from me. Okay, guess I'll have to eat mine. Hey, you want some butter on your biscuit? She perked up a bit. Sure. I wish we had some jelly. I looked back at Mel, who was still at the stove. Are we out of jelly? I haven't gone out to the shed to look. Sit tight. I'll go look, I said to Little Bit. I knew I had a few jars of grape jelly put away. I found it behind the peanut butter. While I was looking, I noticed how thin things were getting on the shelves. There were still many buckets with various contents in them. We would have to start utilizing the stuff in them and get away from the fast and easy canned food. As I was heading out of the shed, I reached over and tapped the mouse pad on the laptop. The screen came to life, and I read, Friendlies inbound, 1200 hours tomorrow. I stood there reading those five words over and over. He was coming here? It was 8:37, 3.5 hours, till he or whoever got here. I went back inside and opened the jelly jar. Little Bit insisted on spreading her own jelly. I sat there eating the eggs without really noticing, thinking about what was going to happen that day. Running the scenarios through my head brought me around. I quickly finished the eggs, smeared some butter and jelly on the biscuit, and headed for the bedroom. Sticking the biscuit in my mouth, I put the vest on, holstered the XD, and slung my carbine. A quick check told me I was still chambered. I was eating the biscuit when I walked back into the kitchen. Mel looked at me as I came in and asked, Where are you going? I got a message from a friend. Sounds like they may be coming here. I need to get up to the roadblock. Who's coming? She asked, and then she looked confused. How did you get a message? Tell you later. I gotta go. Little Bit looked up from her plate. Can I come? No. You stay here and stay inside today, okay? That hurt look she does so well came across her face, and she went back to picking at the eggs again. Chapter 33 Sarge used a red LED to look at his map. It was the same one he had marked up with the route that Thad, Morgan, and Jess would take to get home. He had picked out the LZ the day before, when he had met with the pilots. It was a small lake, and he remembered Morgan saying it was used as a mud bog. Considering how the weather had been, he knew it would be dry. Baptist Lake wasn't far from Morgan's place, and Sarge wanted to get close. The lead Apache came on the radio. Stalker 1, Draco. Stalker 1. Looks like the LZ is clear. Stay to the west. The center of the LZ looks a little soft. Roger that, Draco. Stalker 2. We'll do a bump and go to drop these guys. We'll just cut the sling once the load's on the ground. Roger that, Stalker. We'll orbit the LZ. The pilot's voice came over the intercom. 10 minutes, guys. Sarge keyed the intercom. Roger that. We're ready. If that LZ looks iffy, just get us close and we'll jump out. If you're good with it, I am, came the reply. Sarge looked around the dark cabin. He could just make out the eyes of each of his men through the camo paint. There was no real emotion on their faces. It was just another milk run to them, or at least, that's how it looked. 2 minutes, the intercom cracked. The helo dropped, and when they were about 5 feet off the ground, Mike shoved his pack out and jumped. The others followed. Stalker 1 immediately began to increase power and pull up, and was soon moving out across the LZ. They looked up and could see Stalker 2 coming into the LZ. Ted reached into a cargo pocket and pulled out 2 Psyloom sticks and cracked them as one. Stepping out into the LZ, he began to give the pilot some directions. Stalker 2 came into a hover and began to slowly descend. As soon as the load was on the ground, Ted waved his arm in a cutting motion, and the sling dropped from the belly of the Black Hawk. Ted and Doc immediately went to work disconnecting the web of straps. Mike and Sarge were keeping watch over the operation. Sarge's radio crackled. Draco 1, Stump Knocker.
Go for Stump Knocker.
Good luck, guys. Call us if you need us to bail your ass out again.
Thanks, Draco 1. We appreciate the help.
Get up, Avery!
Marvin shouted as he slapped the sleeping man in the side of the head. Avery bolted upright, rubbing the side of his bandaged head.
Shit, Marv, that hurt! Watch my damn ear!
You didn't hear them helicopters?
Marvin asked as he pulled on his tactical vest. Avery jumped up from the couch he had been sleeping on.
Choppers where?
He asked, as he started to look for his own gear.
They was out there somewheres,
Marvin said, motioning with his chin as he clipped his pistol belt around his waist.
Hurry up and get your shit together. I'll get the boys.
Marvin hurried out of the room to get the rest of the troops together.
Where's my damn gun?
Avery shouted as Marvin closed the door. He stood in the middle of his small room in the trailer, one of several in what the guys called the compound, turning in circles and kicking crap out of the way. The floor of the room was buried in everything from empty beer cans and dirty clothes to quarter pounder wrappers, even though there hadn't been one of those made in many, many weeks. Marvin was the head of the North Lake County Militia. Prior to things going to hell, they used to get together a couple of times a month to drink beer, tell lies, and shoot shit. They were decidedly anti-government, and after the bottle had made the rounds of the old fire pit a couple of times, the usual venom about the Zionist government, the Zog, would start. Even with all the alcohol-fueled hate speech, the only thing they ever killed was a case. With the collapse, the guys had gotten together quickly, preparing to fight off the impending invasion of federal stormtroopers. What happened instead, though, even they wouldn't have believed. After establishing themselves as the security force for the kangaroo store and the old woman who ran it, they had met the first of the DHS security forces coming in to set up camp at the bombing range. Instead of the fight they had always seen coming, they had entered into a partnership. When they were safely couched in the confines of the compound, they would laugh and howl at how they were getting over on the feds. They agreed they would work with the feds so long as the weapons, ammo, and MREs kept coming. So long as the government was willing to arm the militia, they would take everything they could get. That way, by the time the feds had been whittled down trying to deal with the civilian population, they would have the means to take the feds on and win. Avery walked out the back door of the house, dragging his web gear behind him as he tried to buckle his 44-inch belt around his 46-inch waist. To his surprise, there were only 2 other guys there with Marvin.
"Where is everyone?"
Avery asked, as he hunched his shoulders and strained at the belt.
"Them bastards is all hung over. It's just you, Willie, Ned, and me."
Avery got the belt on and let out a long breath.
"And you want for us to look for them choppers?"
Marvin said.
"Course, you idiot. There ain't no reason for no helicopters to be flying out here. It must have crashed. And if we get to it before the feds do, we can get wherever was on it."
"Oh," Avery said, nodding his head.
"Yeah, oh, fat ass," Marvin said.
The men climbed onto their four-wheelers and took off with Marvin in the lead. He had heard the ships early that morning when he was pissing off the front porch. Each of the men were armed with a pistol and a primary weapon. As part of their relationship with the feds, they had acquired some H&K MP5 submachine guns, and the best part was, they were fully automatic. With them had come cases of ammo. Their side of the deal was simple. Do whatever the feds asked. Up to this point, that had been easy. FEMA and the DHS were trying to get people to leave their homes and go to the camps they were setting up, and some of them needed a little persuasion. That was where the militia came in. Unlike what many people thought, the government didn't show up and drag you away. It was much easier to convince you to beg them to let you in. Until recently, all they had to do was ride in and scare the shit out of folks, throw some Molotov cocktails around, maybe take a piece of ass if it was convenient, and the next day they would be lining up for the camp. A few days ago, they had hit a neighborhood where things didn't go according to plan. Sure, there was always a little shooting, but nothing like what they had encountered there. The militia had lost men, a first. Then, they were told to hit them again, but no one wanted to go back. So Avery drew the short straw and was sent back to keep up the heat. When he got back, he was bleeding from the head. Marvin's wife cleaned it up enough to see that his left ear had been shot in two. It was still attached, top and bottom, but the middle of it looked as if someone had taken a melon baller to it. But Avery was proud, said he knew he killed one and hit another. He said he saw one of them drop beside a big smoker, told everyone how them sons of bitches were smoking a whole pig. He also told them how good it smelled, what the food looked like. Avery was a big man, and, as he liked to tell the others, a big man's gotta eat. Mike and Sarge were taking the straps off the buggies while Doc and Ted kept watch. Sarge was dropping the last strap into the trailer when his radio cracked. Draco 3, stump knocker. Sarge turned from the buggy to look out across the dried-up pond, keying his mic.
Go for stump knocker.
Looks like you've got some fast movers heading your way from the east. They aren't heading straight at you, but I think you're their destination. Sarge looked around.
Roger that, Draco 3. Thanks for the info.
You want us to hang out or to engage them?
Negative. I think we can handle them.
Sarge walked around the buggy and said,
Hey, Mike, you and Doc take your ride and head into the woods there. Stay out of sight. We got some company heading our way.
Roger that, Sarge, Mike said, as he and Doc ran toward the smaller of the two buggies. Sarge took a seat in his ride, reached into the breast pocket of his shirt, and drew out one of the Rocky Patels he had managed to hide from Fagioni.
Sarge, you think we should be doing something? Ted asked.
Sarge took a cigar cutter and a lighter from his pocket, clipped the end of it, and lit it. After taking a long drag from the oily cigar, he blew the smoke out and said,
Nope, just relax. Let's see who's coming for a visit.
He leaned his head back and took another long drag on the Rocky. Sarge tapped his cigar, watching as the thick, solid ash cracked, then fell to the ground. He looked over the side of the buggy to see it still mostly in one piece, then looked at the expensive cigar and smiled. Not because of the ash, but the thought that there would never be another one made, and there he was, literally burning something that was priceless and irreplaceable. Ted was looking in every direction for the enemy.
Chill out, Teddy. You're making me nervous, Sarge said.
I don't like being out in the open like this, just waiting for someone to ride up on me, Ted said.
Don't worry. It ain't anyone to be worried about, Sarge said.
He keyed the mic in his radio.
Mikey, you guys set up?
Roger that, Sarge. We got a couple of SAWs set up.
I'm at your 4 o'clock, and Doc is around your 7 o'clock. We got you covered, Mike said. Sarge looked at Ted and said,
See? Nothing to be worried about.
When they heard the engines, Ted's back stiffened. Sarge rested his elbow on the top of the seat and propped his head up. The 4 ATVs came into the clearing from Sarge's 9 o'clock. Not exactly where he'd thought they would, but good enough.
Marvin knew kind of where he had heard the choppers. He led them in the general direction, hoping he would find it. Avery was bringing up the rear, and when they stopped at a branching trail, he asked Marv why they weren't seeing any smoke or fire if the choppers crashed. Marv told him, again, just how damn stupid he was, and fat, and so Avery wasn't exactly in the best of moods as he followed along, eating the dirt and dust from the 3 machines in front of him. Marvin pulled into the clearing that used to be Baptist Lake. As he passed through the trees, Avery didn't immediately see the buggy and the 2 men with it, but Marv did. He stopped as soon as he cleared the trees. Ned and Willie rode up beside him. Willie was smoothing his long goatee, a perpetual unconscious habit. It was about 6 inches long, and it earned him the nickname Goat.
"What you think, Marv?" Willie asked, tugging at his beard. "Fancy-ass buggy. I think I want it."
"They kind of look like soldiers," Ned said.
"Soldiers my ass. Where the hell soldiers gonna come from? Ned, you stay here with fat ass. Goat, come with me."
Marv and Goat slowly rode toward the two men. Marv was watching the one standing up. From the way he stood there, Marv was of the opinion that the man thought